Welcome to the Beard and Glasses podcast with me, Ben Glasses Greasley, and Stephen Beard Hayes.
Thanks for having me. I don't know why I'm saying thanks for having me. It's both of our show.
It is, yeah.
So this week, Ben, we're asking the question, what sequels shouldn't have been made? Now, to be clear, we're talking through the 10 worst sequels made, but all direct sequels, okay?
Yeah.
So these are all number two in a series. So you wanted to have...
Yeah, so I wanted to have things like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, or the Hobbit prequels, like Scrubs Season 8. There's a thousand other things that could count as sequels that you just don't want.
Yeah, whereas that list for me was all over the shop.
Yeah.
Let's keep it nice and clean. Direct sequels, and then we can do the other ones in a year when we've exhausted all that
You love the rules. You're way too much about the rules. But okay, that's fine. We've got to have rules in order to make things work. So
Rules make things fun.
That's the most German thing you've ever said.
So we're not going to do anything expansive on each of these films. We're going to give each one about 3 minutes, both starting on 5 and working up to number 1. And then we'll battle it out for which we think is the worst sequel.
Exactly that. I think I'm going to win, though. I think I've got a clear... winner for number one.
Yeah, I think you might, but just for the sake of audience enjoyment, let's pretend that I don't know.
Let's go through the motions. Okay, do you want to go? So, give me your number 5 then.
So my number 5 is Taken 2. So the Taken movies, the first one is fantastic. It's the classic, my daughter's been taken and I'm going to kill everyone until I get her back sort of narrative.
It's fantastic. It's the kind of thing where... in every other action film, the protagonist doesn't do what you would do. You'd pick up the gun, you'd torture the guy, you'd just do the straightforward thing. And in Taken, he does every single thing you'd want him to do. There's no remorse in it. And you'd be like, yeah, I've had my daughter taken. There is no remorse. No question. I'm going to absolutely go mental on this guy.
It's like a 13-year-old boy wrote that script and just thought, what do I want to see?
That's exactly it. And I was quite happy with that.
And this will be a theme across the majority of these sequels that we're talking about, that really, really good sequels take things in a different direction. Weak ones tend to just repeat the exact same story beats and plot elements. And Taken 2 does exactly that.
Yes.
So I think they're in Istanbul and the mum gets taken. And you think, oh, okay, here we go. People were obviously crying out for it.
That's the problem. You get a sleeper hit that you weren't expecting was going to do that, and then they just repeat the thing again, much like the Sharknado films that aren't on this list, because each one is more fantastic than the last.
So that's Taken 2. Wouldn't recommend watching it. I would almost say just rewatch the first film and it'd be a far more enjoyable endeavor.
Yeah, just exchange the word daughter for wife and you've got film number 2.
And what's 3?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I bothered with 3.
I think he gets taken by 3.
Wow.
And he has to save himself.
Is 4 a package that's on his doorstep gets taken and he has to go and sort that out.
Nice. COVID related.
Love it.
Brilliant. What's your number 5, Ben?
So my number 5 is Ocean's 12. I love Ocean's 11. It's one of my favourite films. I love the style and the feel of it. It's just great. It's got so much... it's got so much style. I'm using the word again.
It's classy film.
It's a classy film. And
when Beck and I went to Vegas in 2017, we had to go to the Bellagio because it's like that's the casino they set up in that movie, and it's so suave and
it's great.
Cool.
But as a film, it's brilliant. It's got brilliant characters in it. It's got a clear, understandable plot line, and it has just the right amount of everyone in it. And then they came up...
it's one of the great heist movies.
It is a great heist movie. And then they came up with Ocean's 12, which is a mess. Just it's got... everyone has been amped up to 11 just because they thought that's what everyone wanted. It's got a mess of a plot that you can't follow along, isn't enjoyable to watch, and is partially there as a kind of joke for the bad guy in it. It's all just a mess, and...
kind of undermines the first movie as well, because...
that's the problem with bad sequels. They undermine the first film.
The entire first film is about getting this heist, and then it's undermined. Like, oh, they caught them, and now they have to pay it back. So it's kind of like, really bad sequels make the first movie worse because of it.
Yes, and I think we're going to see that across the board. I mean, there's a few elements in the second film that I do like. There's this one scene in Amsterdam with Hagrid, and he's there, and they do this whole Lost in Translation thing on Matt Damon, and that's a great scene, but there's moments of that. But the rest of it is, it just knows it's too cool, and it tries to be cool so badly, and it fails across it.
It's filmed really poorly as well, so there's loads of shaky, intentionally shaky camera work. It just feels all over the shop.
Was it after the Bourne Identity came out? So was Ocean's 11 prior to Bourne, and then Ocean's 12 after Bourne, and then shaky cam is in, and everyone loves shaky cam?
Yeah, I think a few films probably tried to borrow the Bourne vibe, but they all failed.
So of those two, who do you think wins?
Taken 2 and...
Ocean's 12.
Yours?
Ocean's 12 was my one. I think Taken 2 is the worst sequel of the two.
Yet, if you had to watch one now, I'd probably watch Taken 2.
I would probably watch Taken 2.
To watch one of the two.
Yeah.
So therefore, I think we can say that
Ocean's 12 is worse. Okay.
Okay, so number four for me.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park 2. Is it The Lost World?
Yeah, The Lost World. Who doesn't like a Tyrannosaurus Rex stomping around, is it San Diego?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the end of the film where they just think, oh, let's just go nuts with it.
Let's go King, full-on King Kong.
The first film is obviously just brilliant. Still, effects-wise, decent enough.
It looks better than the second one and the third one, and it looks better than the Lost World films that they did now. And again, we
and
can
looks
talk...
better than the Scorpion King.
Oh, everything looks better than the Scorpion King.
Yeah, so it's another island where there's more dinosaurs being bred.
It's worse than that because What's-His-Face explains this. He does terrible plot exposition in the film. He actually says...
Jeff Goldblum
says to the old guy, What's-His-Face?
What? David Attenborough.
David Attenborough.
And
his brother, not David Attenborough, Richard Attenborough. He says to Richard Attenborough, so there's another island now, no fences, blah, 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 blah. You know, he actually full-on plot exposits the whole thing in one scene. And it's terrible. And the whole film is just Greenpeace gone mad and awful.
And Goldblum's pretty hard in that movie.
He really Goldblums. If you go on YouTube, you can find clips of just all of his sounds mannerisms of that film all put together. And it's a fair number of minutes.
Yeah, I feel like when he's expositing, he has this kind of hyper mad shrew. Kind of,
yeah, he does. He kind of gets hunched up and his hands get together and he does crazy things. It's not pleasant to watch. Luckily, it's not as bad as Jurassic Park 3, which isn't on this list.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you what happens in that movie. Not convinced I've seen it. What's your number four?
So my number four is Pirates of the Caribbean 2, which I think was called Dead Man's Chest.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed the first Pirates of the Caribbean film.
Wonderful movie.
It's great. It's got Johnny Depp doing a fantastic character. He just goes, I think this is his basic understanding of how he created the character. He goes, I like the Rolling Stones and I like, oh, what's his name?
Keith Richards.
I like Keith Richards. What if Keith Richards was a pirate? And that's about it.
None of that stuff was in the script or in the character bio or anything. He just made it a huge part.
It's great. He shows up and he does all this bonkers stuff. I can remember the opening scene of when he comes in and he appears on the top of this boat and then the shot pans out a bit and it's just like the top few inches as he steps onto the dock.
Oh, great character introduction.
And it's fantastic. And it's great fun. But then Dead Man's Chest comes along and it tries to create a whole world mythology with Davy Jones' locker, with all of these rules and stuff that can happen. And they tell Johnny Depp to say, right, you've got this fantastic Jack Sparrow character, but what if Jack Sparrow was more Jack Sparrow than Jack Sparrow? And it just goes bonkers, and everything gets amped up and up and up, because they thought, they liked him, let's have more and more and more of him.
But the reason he works so well in the first movie is that he's not the main character, so really it's following the narrative around Will Turner, Legolas's character.
Yeah.
And Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Swann.
Yes. See, this is the point. You can remember the character names from that first film.
Yeah. The lead wasn't Johnny Depp, so he was able to just have fun and almost just add colour to that movie, mess around with it. When they made him more central it put too much pressure on the character to actually carry important plot points and all the rest of it.
His character in that film is a guitar solo, and that's great. You have minutes of a guitar solo, and it does great things, but if an album is just one long, endless guitar solo, doesn't matter how good it is, it's just going to do your head in. And that's exactly what that film does. And then the follow-up film to that doesn't even have Legolas or What's-Her-Face Keira Knightley in it. It just has Captain Jack Sparrow doing crazy things.
You know, when Orlando Bloom says no to a movie, everyone should probably say no
run,
to a movie.
Run hard. You're right.
Yeah. Very poor.
So what were our two? So it was Pirates of the Caribbean versus Jurassic Park 2. I would watch Pirates of the Caribbean 2 over Jurassic Park 2.
Same.
So you win on that one, mate.
So Jurassic Park 2 is the worst film.
Yes.
Okay, coming in at number 3 then. So I've got Zoolander 2.
Right, so I haven't even watched Zoolander 2. I love Zoolander, the first film. I think it's utter gold. The whole thing is fantastic throughout. Is. And I heard that Zoolander 2...
Why male models? You're kidding? I just told you a moment ago.
I love that David Duchovny's in it as a hand model, and it's...
Oh, fantastic.
But then I heard the second film was coming out, and as it was getting produced, everyone was like, really?
Yeah.
And I didn't watch it, and I haven't seen it, and in my mind, it doesn't exist.
Sadly for you, I have seen it. I love the first movie. It's fantastic. And in the second one, Zoolander's school for kids who can't read good literally collapses, killing his wife and injuring Hansel. Zoolander's son is then taken away from him by social services, and then Zoolander and Hansel are has-beens and recluses, but several pop stars get killed, and then the people getting killed die with one
bored,
of the...
Bored, lost me already, bored.
Yeah, no, all the celebrities are dying with Blue Steel, the trademark...
Oh, the look on his face.
...he does in the first movie. So they get, rather than the FBI or whoever, they get Hansel and Zoolander in to solve the murders.
That makes sense.
Everyone, and this is another thing, very true, certainly of comedy sequels, they all seem very self-aware that they know it's not as good. So they ramp up their performances to caricatures. The jokes are never as funny or as classic, but they try to recreate jokes from the first film. And you just think, loads of celebrity cameos. So if you like a cameo...
I like a cameo when it's David Bowie, but I don't like the cameo when it's not. I mean, he's...
Penelope Cruz is in it.
No.
For what it's worth. Yeah.
No, that's not going to make it up.
Yeah, Ben Stiller's actual real-life wife is his wife in the first movie. So you think she would have been a little bit miffed that he didn't write her into the sequel?
Maybe it's a funny thing that he likes to kill her in films.
Doesn't sound funny to me, Ben. What's your number 3?
So my number 3... is Mission Impossible 2. That well-known, highly regarded film. I love the...
Is that the one that had the Limp Bizkit?
Yeah.
Song.
Had the Limp Bizkit song, and at the end, it had a motorcycle joust battle thing. It was... So it was directed by... I can't remember his name.
John Woo.
John Woo, it was, which gives you an action idea already. But... Tom Cruise was the producer on it. So I don't think Tom Cruise was the producer on the original Mission Impossible, which is a great film. I really like that film. It's not the easiest film to follow, but it pays off at the end and you enjoy it and it's got style and feel to it. And then MI2, as they branded the second film, has a Limp Bizkit version of the song and it has motorbikes doing crazy things and it has...
John Woo
and it has...
I love that three times in this episode already. You've already said, what's that person's name?
What's that person's name?
It shows the level of prep.
It's like, just going on my gut here. And it has way too much of Tom Cruise running, which I know is a thing in the Mission Impossible universe that you run everywhere. But the plot is awful.
When I saw that movie for the first time, I really enjoyed it. I was probably about 14 and I
think that's the sweet spot for it.
It's another one where time has revealed it to be a movie that I don't really enjoy.
Time has not been kind.
Dougal Scott. And Thani Newton, is it?
Yes.
It's just a bit of a drag.
It's not great. And Tom Cruise is just this crazy looking nutter in the thing. All the way through, he's just got this madness.
He's got lovely feathered hair, though.
Oh, he does have a fantastic do in that one. I will give it points for the do.
Very good for slow motion action sequences.
If only they had a director who was good at slow motion action sequences and nothing else.
But wait, they do.
But wait. So some of these are just in comparison to the first one. The first one was great, and then the second one was horrifically terrible. Okay, so which would you watch? Would it be Mission Impossible 2 or Zoolander 2?
I would watch Zoolander 2 because I've only seen it once and I've seen Mission Impossible 2 quite a few times and I just can't deal with watching Dougherty Scott be all Dougherty Scotty. What would you watch?
I haven't even seen Zoolander 2 and I love Zoolander 1, but I would still watch Zoolander 2 over Mission Impossible 2.
So Mission Impossible 2 is the inferior sequel.
Is the worst sequel. Mission Impossible 2, are we going to say wins in inverted commas?
Yes, let's say it wins.
Who comes in at number two for you?
Number two for me is Dumb and Dumber 2.
Now, so that is the third film in that franchise.
There's a prequel.
So there was Dumb and Dumber, then there was, is it When Harry Met Lloyd?
Sounds like that could be a title.
Is this, I think, was the film they produced, but it had different actors, and then they did Dumb and Dumber 2 with T-double-O, wasn't it?
No, it's just T-O.
Oh, okay.
Which is even more annoying.
Yeah.
But obviously that's the gag. Now, there were moments in the film that were funny.
Again,
there were moments where I laughed.
I haven't seen this one.
So you're very much, if you see a comedy that you enjoy and then 15 years later they make a sequel, you're just against it.
I hold out hope, but so far I've been disappointed.
Now, the greatest gag in Dumb and Dumber 2 was ruined in the trailer. Now, the gag is that Lloyd hasn't been able to speak since Mary Swanson,
yeah,
in the first film, since she went off with that guy. Or it was related to something that happened in the first movie. Maybe after they got kicked off the bus with all the swimsuit models on. But Lloyd hasn't spoken in 20 years. And he gets visited by Harry in this residential home. And then he reveals that the whole thing's been a prank. and he's gone to all those lengths. 20 years of not speaking to a soul. All for a gag. And it's quite funny. But they used it in the trailer. And then when you actually got to the film, that reveal was completely wasted. Now, Jeff Daniels is a fantastic actor. He really is.
Yeah, he's a great actor, but I'm guessing not in this.
I'd say both of them do a better job of not being self-aware than in other comedy sequels.
Okay.
But it's still, you know, painful references to the first film where they're just trying to force a movie that doesn't need to be forced.
Are they just playing the nostalgia card? Are they just...
Yeah. I think they're playing the less milk cash cow card.
Sadly, a lot of these sequels are.
But usually, when there's been a big gap of time, is the worst. So Austin Powers 2, very good. Naked Gun 2, very good.
Yes, I like that one.
Hot Shots Part 2,
yeah,
very good. So I think comedy sequels work when they're...
It's got to be on a roll.
Yeah, and comedy changes. So the comedy that was valid 15, 20 years ago just isn't anymore. So they have to try and recreate the feel of the first movie, but in a different time.
It's not going to happen, is it?
No, you invariably find yourself wishing you were just watching the first one. So Dumb and Dumber 2, it was okay, and I think it's watchable, but it's still a sequel that didn't need to be made, and if I'm honest, mostly rubbish.
And it brings down the first one.
Exactly, yeah. So what's your number two?
So my number two is Thor the Dark World, which follows... So in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you have Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, then Thor. And the first two Iron Men films... Iron Man's films...
Iron Man films.
I prefer Iron Men. Are very much grounded.
I'm just gonna take that soundbite of you saying I prefer Iron Men.
Ah.
And make a track out of it.
Okay.
Or if there's anyone listening who wants to do that, that'd be great.
Yeah, crack on. So you've got the first two Iron Man films, which are very much grounded in kind of reality, in as much as you have a guy who can create a suit and do crazy things with it. But it's not, you know, it's not fantastical. And then they go straight into Thor, and they go straight into Norse god mythology. They go straight into Asgard and magic hammers and Are You Worthy? And they go into fantastic Shakespearean. It's fantastic. And I love that Kenneth Branagh directed it. And it's very serious. It does take itself quite serious. But I love the whole, he goes walking into a pet shop saying, I need a horse. And they say in it, we only have cats or dogs here. He says, well, give me one of those large enough I can ride. And it's just fantastic dialogue. It's, again, a clean, understandable plot. It's a straightforward story. It has a great amount of character development.
Now, because it's part of the Marvel franchise, it's only just okay as a direct sequel. Because they're all continuing stories, aren't they? So
they are, but Thor the Dark World, you could watch, could you? Could you watch Thor 1, 2 and 3 back-to-back with each other without watching all the other films?
You can do anything if you try hard enough, Ben.
You're right, you can.
And that goes for all you listening too.
Is that your motivation for the day?
Yeah, just throwing it in there. So talk to us about the actual Thor Dark World film. What makes it a bad sequel?
Everything. So they get more serious, but they don't have Kenneth Branagh directing, so you don't get any witticisms at all. You don't get any character...
Is that a word?
Witticisms, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely a nice word. You don't get any character development, really. You get a trite villain in the form of Malekith, who's a dark elf who wants to bring the universe back to darkness, apparently.
What's his motivation?
He wants to... It was dark before... He doesn't like the lights on. So the lights were off in the universe before, which is why they're called dark elves. Then the light came about, and he's trying to turn it all off again and destroy everyone because...
Apparently, when I was little, I'd ask my dad to turn the dark on. Turn the dark on.
I can understand that. Sense. Well, you and Malekith would have something in common then. But then it turns into this whole save the world thing with weird temporal portals and the alignment of the planet and ley lines and the Greenwich Meridian.
Queen Amidala in that one?
She is, yes, briefly. Oh no, actually quite a lot. And it's just terrible. It has Loki in it. Does it have Loki in it? Yes, it does. And he's kind of a good bad guy in this one, but it's all just terrible, awful rubbish. And you can skip straight from the first Thor film to the third Thor film without missing much on it.
Okay, then. So we got Dumb and Dumber 2 versus Thor Dark World. I'd watch Dumb and Dumber 2.
I'd watch Thor the Dark World just because I think if I watched Dumb and Dumber 2, it would ruin the original Dumb and Dumber for me.
But if we go with Dumb and Dumber 2, then we'll be tied going into the final.
Okay, done. Not that we've prepared this beforehand or anything, but we haven't. We're deciding as we go.
Well, we haven't.
So we're tied into the final, have we?
Can you hear the dog barking?
I can hear the dog barking. Tell him to shut up.
Don't get that on Joe Rogan, do you? Okay, well, let's launch into number one.
Now, I know what yours is going to be.
Yeah.
Go on.
So my number one is similar to a few of them. It's a comedy sequel brought out many years after the original. Yes, you guessed it. It's Anchorman 2.
Now,
this is another one like the others that you've refused to watch.
Yep, haven't watched it.
But the headlines are that Veronica and Ron Burgundy move to New York and Veronica Corningstone gets promoted. And Ron gets fired, which is pretty much what happens in the first movie.
Yep.
Then he assembles the old team, which is what happens in the first movie.
Yep.
And they get a job on a 24-hour news channel, one of the first of its kind. And they get given the graveyard shift, but then they make it really good
okay.
by doing tacky news, and it's almost like a
commentary
on how news has descended into tacky reporting with no journalistic integrity. But it's either you're a comedy movie or you want to make a serious point.
Does anyone get their arm ripped off by a bear?
It has, yeah. Well, I'm not sure if that happens, but it has another fight with another news crew.
Oh.
With about 15 news crews full of cameos.
Okay.
Lots of attempts at repeats of jokes from the first one. And there's lots of very clearly improvised jokes that they were attempting to... They all look like they had a blast making it, but you're kind of sat watching it. Almost like the first movie, you feel a part of it. And the second one, you're just kind of watching other people have a good time whilst you're out in the rain looking in.
Yeah, that sounds very personal to you, Steve. Has that happened?
No.
Were you outside my window last time it was raining?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Oh, I think that's a wise move.
It hasn't rained in a while. So yeah, it's another time where fans don't know what they want, because fans definitely wanted this film to be made.
I wanted this film to be made 2 years after the first one came out, though, like you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think that's the main point. And, you know, the first film is just so good. I love Lamp. Works 60% of the time every time.
Pretty much every line in that film is one that I quote often.
Yeah. And the second one doesn't do that. I can't remember a single line from it. Jim Carrey's in it, though, playing a Canadian.
Okay.
Oh, no, he is Canadian.
He is Canadian, isn't he? Jim, if you're watching, tell us if you're if you're listening, tell us if you're Canadian or not.
You could be watching. You could be looking at the little graphic.
He could be looking at the graphic.
Number one, Ben.
Number one is an easy win. The Matrix Reloaded. After the first Matrix film came out, in 1999, Matrix came out, which is a fantastic film. It has brilliant plot. It has very, I'm not going to say good characterization, because Keanu Reeves doesn't really do, you know, character or acting or stuff.
No.
But it fits in the film perfectly. Every shot in that whole film you could put on a wall in your house.
Beautiful.
And some of the lines in it are just fantastic. So pretty much every time I get a spoon in the kitchen, I still say there is no spoon. Hang on. Yes, that's in that film. Yeah, that's in the first one.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I still say there is no spoon. Lots of stuff like that. And
yeah, the first Matrix film is absolutely iconic. I remember I was watching it, and it's quite a complicated movie, as anyone who's seen it will know. And my dad walked in with 5 minutes left and went, "Oh, what's going on? What's this about?" Like, Dad, you're going to have to watch it. So it's such a good film.
I remember it came out in the cinema, and I went to see it in the cinema.
That's often the case with new films, Ben.
It is, you're right. And I came out of the cinema from watching it, and a couple of days later, some friends were asking me, can you tell me anything about the film? And, you know, the whole thing of, what is The Matrix? And it kind of played out. Like, no, I can't tell you anything about this film. I can't tell you what The Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. And you just tied everything into it. It was great.
One of those films that makes you question your reality a little bit.
It still does. I'm not sure if I'm in The Matrix or not. And people would say that. So something odd would happen, like a huge pandemic or Trump being president or whatever else, and they would say, well, there's clearly a glitch in The Matrix, isn't there?
Yeah.
And then they came up with The Matrix Reloaded, and then what's the third one? Matrix Revelation?
Revolution.
Revolution, yeah. But we're just going to talk about Reloaded. That took everything that the first film did, where it finished on this great culmination. It had no need to do anything else. That's the thing. It finishes so well, and then it leaves enough to your imagination where you can enjoy what you think will be the next thing that happens in this world, and then does some terrible stuff where it has a superhuman Neo, who you see at the end of the first film, but then brought down. So he's not as superhuman because the Smiths are upgraded, but they're different Agent Smiths. The original.
Once again, he killed Smith, but then Smith's back.
Smith's
so
back.
Who cares now?
And now there's an infinite number of Smiths, and there's this horrible CG scene where he fights hundreds of them in a courtyard. And it...
Yeah, that's in the same league as
Scorpion King.
Scorpion King. It's like a PlayStation 1 cutscene, isn't it?
It is. It's awful. I think
it's
the actual.
So.
The PlayStation 1 game, I think, had better visuals than the film. It was terrible. The plot, oh my goodness. You go and see the Merovingian to talk to the Keymaker in order to do this, in order to get that.
So much dialogue.
And then you talk to the, or what's her name, the...
Oracle.
The Oracle, but the Oracle has changed her appearance, her skin has changed or something.
But in fairness to them, that's because the actress died.
I know, but they could have explained it in a different way. And then there's, you've already made the decision, yeah. But you need to understand how you've made the decision. Oh, and it's all terrible. Is the architect in that one as well, or is the architect in the next one?
I think so. The second two blur together.
Oh.
The problem for me is, in the first one, it's like this one ship, the Nebuchadnezzar, and this crew, and Neo, and it's all quite kind of like cozy, like it's their little mission.
The world is small, and then, but it's good.
Yeah, and in the next film, that's just one ship of many. And they're all... Is that the one with Zion? And they're all like...
They're having the rave in Zion, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't want to go there.
It's bonkers.
I wouldn't want to be a part of that, honestly. And it makes me think that whatever world they have isn't worth saving anymore.
No, the Zion that is in your imagination from the first film is way, way better than what you get in the second film. Now, visually...
The Wachowski,
let's go with that. Siblings, are we calling them that now?
Yes, that is right there. That's what they're...
The Wachowskis. I think they do some interesting world building, but I don't think it's good. So some of the visuals, I have concept art books for those second and third films, and it's fantastic. I love the way that things look in the concept art. The whole creation of kind of the Zion harbour where all the ships come in, the big kind of robot gorilla things with the giant machine gun arms are fantastic and they look amazing. But the film is rubbish. And it's so sad because the first one is such a cultural touchstone. It's such a great film. Still enjoyable to watch now. It stands up. And yeah, I can watch that one so many times. I mean, the whole scene where he loses his mouth. The first scene of the film where you don't know anything about The Matrix.
It's all fantastic. The second film is a classic case of no need for it. And it does... make the first one. It undermines elements of the first one. And Ben, I believe they're making more.
They are. They're making two more.
Blimey. So we can criticise that sequel when it comes out.
Oh, yeah. I certainly hope they're better than the following two. But it's... Yeah, so sadly that one exists and it's at the top of my list. How does it compare to yours?
Well, I think Anchorman 2 is bad. But I think when you think of sequels that really undermined the first movie and just left you feeling utter disappointment, I think you've got this one, because The Matrix 2 is dreadful.
It belittles the first film too much and it's just a terrible film. I would prefer to watch Anchorman 2 than The Matrix Reloaded.
Yeah, likewise. Well, that was our list. We've left no stone unturned, I don't believe there, Ben.
No. Are you going to watch any of these films?
No. But I think overall, you look at sequels, and I think we've actually landed on something, that in comedies, sequels do work, but they have to be made quite close to the originals to capture the same spirit. And films that do well, and then sequels are made because there's potential financial reward, never seem to be that good. When it's thought out from the start, sequels can be great.
Absolutely.
And we'll probably come back to sequels that should have been made.
Absolutely.
Ooh.
Oh, that's it.
Mind you, we'll make a list and then it'll probably be about 4 seconds. And people might be crying out for it.
They could well be. Out. And I think that's time for us to finish. If you want to watch any of these films, you can borrow them all off Steve. I think he's got all of them. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Thanks very much, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.